Hey, I'm Becca. I'm a drug addict and alcoholic. Yeah.
Oh, is it up?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Oh, the tiny one.
Yeah, the tiny one. Wow. Yeah, so I don't know what that other one is. That one I look a little bit better. The littler one was my second time at Austin Recovery. I guess I'll just tell you about that day and how I came to AR. I'd been in psychosis for about 3 years. I was convinced that there were people after me. I was living in motel rooms. Didn't start out that way, but that's definitely where it ended. And I would love to say that this was the last time that I got clean, but it's actually not the last time. So I was stranded in Pflugerville, and I ended up coming to Austin Recovery at like 10 o'clock at night. As most of you know, they don't take intakes that late at night. They made an exception for me because I was so on death's door, really, although I would not have said that myself. I really was that unaware and that far gone from reality. So they didn't have a bed for me. They let me sleep in the safe closet, which I don't know if they have it anymore, but it was like a safe room or whatever with, you know, just a bunch of extra, like a storage closet, basically. And I slept. And then they tried to wake me up, and that's when they took this picture, is the next morning when they were trying to wake me up, and I just could not sit through the intake. I ended up staying at Austin Recovery for 60 days. They did an extension and allowed me to stay longer because I really needed the help. And, you know, that's what's interesting, I think, about this disease, at least for me, is I really felt like I was surrendered. You know, I was clear on wanting something different, you know, and I tried to do everything that they asked me to do. What happened is I discharged from Austin Recovery and went to a sober living, did IOP, and I had some reservations, and that reservation was in the form of a boyfriend. I just absolutely could not imagine not having this person in my life. So my intention was to find him, and he was like living on the streets of Austin at the time, find him and help him get sober. And, you know, I was reflecting on this. What's interesting also about this disease is, you know, the delusion, you know, it really is astonishing. I saw him, I was on my way to some sober thing, and I got off the bus, I saw him like riding his bike, and I caught up with him, and he had some meth on him. I could see he had a meth pipe in his pocket. And I remember calling Gina and saying, I saw him today, and I was fine. Like, he had meth on him, and I didn't even want to do it. It was, you know, like, I really felt like I was recovered, you know? Like, I was on the path, and I was going to show him what that path was. And, oh, I don't even know what I thought we were going to do, but I didn't really think that far ahead. So I did see him two more times. And on that third time, you know, I was in that sober living, and I called Gina, and I had some kind of problem with some girl in the house. And she said to me, you know, that's concerning when you start collecting enemies like this, when you start, you know, being in collision with everybody. And I couldn't really hear her. I ended up leaving that sober living in the middle of the night. That's kind of how I rolled. You know, I didn't care about my stuff or the fact that somebody else was going to have to pack it up. I can't tell you how many times my shit has been on the porch of some sober living in some state, many, many times. So that's what I did. I ended up going out for another month, and in that month, it was really more of the same, and until I finally did get sober this time. I've been sober about 2.5 years, a little over 2.5 years. Thank you. And what I think is cool about that this time around is that I actually really care about my clean time. It's not like just some, you know, far off thing or some numbers that I'm counting. It really means something to me. And I do a lot of things to protect my recovery because I truly never want to go back, you know. And I don't delude myself into thinking that that's not possible for me because of that experience that I just shared about and so many others. That's just the last one, you know. There were so many other instances where that took place. So I do. I do a lot of things, including saying yes to stuff like this that is just terrifying to me. You know, but as I was, you know, thinking about what I was going to say, because, of course, I rehearsed it, and I'm saying none of the things I thought I was going to say, by the way. I have a message, you know. I definitely do have a message of hope, and I'm going to own that because I really do have a message of hope. That girl, and then this woman, you know, in recovery, there was just such a big difference, and there was a lot of things that I did in between that and this. I guess I'll start at the beginning of my life just to give you some overview, although I think it's pretty clear that I did drugs. You know, I don't feel like I need to go. That's the cool thing about that picture is I don't really have to explain. It's pretty clear, you know, that I got loaded. That's what I did 24 hours, you know, all day long. It was my full-time occupation, was ways and means to get more drugs. So I was born in another country. I was born in Auckland, New Zealand, and I moved here in 1986 with my parents. And why that is important, I think, to share about is because we were running, you know, and that's what I learned from my parents. They were not drug users. They certainly were drinkers. And their solution, especially my dad's solution to his untreated alcoholism, was to move, you know, to build up an empire, make some bad decisions, and then run. And that's exactly what we did. And we just ran all the way, you know, on the other side of the world. My dad's actually been sober for a long time now, but those were some early lessons that I learned from him. When shit gets hard, you just leave, you know, and I definitely took that into my life, into my adult life for sure. So I moved here. I was in fourth grade. It was a very awkward, horrible time for me. I was an awkward kid with a weird accent, which was only novel to these kids for a few, you know, weeks, and then I was kind of mercilessly teased. And what I learned from that is the best way to deal with that is to deflect, you know, and I started to become a bully myself, you know. So we went on to, you know, I was raised in privilege, you know. I certainly had a lot of things. You know, my parents were really into money, property, and prestige. That was their belief was, you know, to buy something to fix. And that is definitely one of the beliefs that I took from them also is, you know, it matters what's going on the outside, keeping up appearances, how do you look. My mom was also severely anorexic. So that is something that I definitely took into my life as well. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But suffice to say that it was a big sticking point for me in getting clean and gaining weight in recovery. You know, it really was. And it's a real thing. And so I'm going to talk about it, you know, because it truly, until I surrendered that and was willing to, you know, surrender and you know, but things had to get really, really bad until I was willing to do that. You know, I still, you know, I thought this looked good, you know. I was really delusional about that. Anyway, so fast forward, I was a really troubled kid. I was a very angry kid. I was told by my family, and I was put in different psychologist's office, seven, 8 years old, because I was so pissed off. And I was pissed off because things seemed so damn unfair. You know, things were so unjust, and I fought a lot with my mother, and again, my household was just a battleground, you know, and I really wanted things to change, and I felt like I needed to get out there and crusade for things to change, and it just put me on, you know, on blast with my family. I was this, you know, the absolute scapegoat, and I was fine with that role. So I crusaded my way right into my first treatment center when I was 15 years old. It was an adolescent treatment center. I did not really have a drug problem at that point. I had a pretty severe behavior problem. I was a very angry, as I said, very angry kid that would run away. You know, I probably dabbled a tiny bit in drugs, but that was not what I was there for. I was there to learn how to act right. I don't know. I had no emotional regulation. I had no emotional, like, control over my emotions. So later on in my life, when I found drugs, I felt like that was the solution to my inability to control the way, you know, control my emotions. You know, I felt sad or angry or happy or whatever. I had something to kind of level that out, you know. I distinctly remember the first time that I used heroin, I felt like this was the answer to my problems because I don't feel a fucking thing anymore. I feel nothing, and that is exactly what I was looking for. So anyway, my first treatment center, I ran away from there, you know, and that was just a series of, my parents basically did not want to parent anymore. They were getting divorced, and neither one of them really wanted me because I was difficult, you know. And so that was very painful. At the time, I thought that was great because they gave me my own apartment. They paid for it, and they just sent me to another part of town and allowed me to just do me. And I was 16, 17 years old at that point, and I had zero life skills, like none. I was also in continuation school or alternative school, so I had like every juvenile delinquent, including myself, hanging out at my new apartment, learning all kinds of new things, you know? And and that is where the trouble continued. I don't want to say it began because that's not really where it began. But anyway, so fast forward again. You know, I had a ability, an uncanny ability to find the most self-destructive people I could find and just, you know, be with them. That's who I wanted. I picked out the most self-destructive people in that school. What are you doing? Oh, you're injecting drugs? I want to learn how to do that, you know? And that's, so I wasn't one of those people that swore I would never do certain, you know, drugs or that I would never use certain, you know, delivery methods. I went for that immediately. I was really self-destructive. I now know that I had some pretty severe self-hatred, but at the time, you know, I just didn't have any awareness of that, and I didn't have any parents, you know, so or any accountability at all. So that's what happened. By the time I was, I guess, 20, I was in my first real treatment center. This was 2001. So, I guess I was about 20 years old. I was pretty strung out at that point. But I did, you know, I didn't really understand what that meant. I didn't realize that I was going to get sick. I didn't realize that, I just didn't really know. So I went to that treatment center, and they told me about a thing called, they told me about a way that I could basically not be dope sick anymore. And I stayed on that medicine for years on and off. And really what that helped me do was just kind of circle the drain. You know, I never really got bad off enough to seek help again. And I did that for, you know, over 10 years, just basically putting Band-Aids on, you know, over and over again. So where am I now? So I'm still, lived in California before I moved to Austin. So this is all mostly happening in California. Some other things I want to mention is that one of the things that happened was that I started using people when I wasn't using drugs, or I used people and drugs, you know, together. It was usually me, one other person, and the dope. And so I've been married a couple of times. I met a lot of these men I met in meetings, you know. I mean, that's the truth. I had to have a lot of wreckage in the rooms. And I think that's important to mention because it kind of soured me to the program, you know. I was pretty young when I was hanging around. I was never in recovery, and I want to be clear about that because I'm in recovery now, and so now I know the difference. But at the time, I was hanging around the meetings and going to all the social meetings and meeting people and, you know, meeting more self-destructive people, learning new things again. And so that was kind of my walk for about 10 years. In 2011, I met the last person I married, and he's from Austin, or he's from Texas, he's from Houston. And so this particular person, why I guess it's important to mention is that it lasted for a long time, and there were a lot of lessons in that relationship for me, and those lessons were not enough to keep me sober. And I think that's important. So in 2011, after years of us messing around with drugs and getting arrested and going to jail. See, I never really went to jail. That's another important thing. I never went to jail. Other people went to jail around me, you know, until later when I started going to jail myself. So he would go to jail. This last particular time, we were living in Long Beach, and he decided that he needed to drive. He had a driver's license that was suspended in three different states, so there was no way he was going to be able to get any kind of vehicle or any kind of license to drive an actual car, so we got a Vespa. We got a scooter, and we had a lot of fun on that scooter. This is I think, one of the lessons I took out of that situation. So we were living in Long Beach. We were on a maintenance drug, so we weren't getting loaded, per se. But we were also weren't, like, seeking any kind of spiritual solution. So it's just a matter of time for me when I don't have a solution that I'm gonna default to get high. That's just, I can't sit with myself for that long. I can't sit with uncomfortable feelings. I have no solution for that. So that's what happened. We were living in a great little apartment, and this is kind of the story of my life, actually. I get everything that I want. I build it all back up after a big fire. You know, I've set my life on fire. I build it all back up. I stay clean-ish for a little while. And then I literally looked at him one day. We're sitting on the couch, and I said, "Let's get high." And I can't even remember what he said. I mean, he probably said no once, and then, you know, he wasn't hard to convince. So that's what we did. And why that's important on that last particular time is because he continued. We both continued. He continued, and he got on that Vespa, and he crashed. And he crashed really badly. And he, to this day, is severely brain injured. He lives in an assisted living here in Austin. And that still wasn't enough to keep me clean. You know, that still wasn't enough. It just kind of boggles the mind. Like, the cunning, baffling, powerful, that's really a thing. You know, it was certainly a thing for me. So 2011, he's, you know, in the hospital. Again, I'm back on some kind of maintenance drug. I've stopped. I was good at stopping. I was not good at staying stopped. You know, that, and I think when I finally put two and two together that, like, I really want sustainable recovery, like, I want to stay stopped. How do you do that? You know, that things started to change for me. So, ultimately we ended up moving to Austin. I moved him to that assisted living, and, I moved into an apartment here in Austin, and that's where I met Gina, actually, in 2012. And again, still on some kind of, still on maintenance drug, not really trying to do anything, actually, just really, I really had some pretty strong beliefs about AA or about 12-step programs. I was pretty shut down to it. I really didn't think I needed anything like that. And actually, I thought I had tried it already, and that it didn't work. And, you know, turns out that wasn't the truth. But at the time, that was absolutely what I believed, you know, because I felt like, man, I just checked off all your boxes and I still feel the same and I'm still getting loaded. So it's obviously not working. Maybe I'm one of those that's constitutionally incapable. Maybe I really need to be on this thing or to have some kind of thing to put on top of my feelings to get through this life. Later, so 2012, I'm living in this apartment in Austin, and the same thing happened. I'd just been given, you know, everything I wanted, basically, and I had that same feeling sitting on a couch of, you know, this isn't it either. You know, here I am with, like, all of the things that I have been collecting over the last year or two or whatever it was, and I still feel the same. So, this is funny. So I got online, and that's where I met somebody, and it's interesting how we have radar, right, for what it is that we want. You know, there were, like, many options, and I chose the guy that was strung out of meth for 25 years. You know, that's the guy. And it wasn't a conscious choice, but it was, you know, it was my choice. And I remember driving to his house and seeing him out there, like, at 2 in the morning, messing with a motorcycle that was so broken. It was so broken. And it's still, I'm sure, so broken in pieces somewhere. And I just thought, you know, and that voice, that feeling, you know, that this is a really bad idea. Let's go, you know, like, there's no, I didn't trust myself. I didn't have a higher power, certainly, that I was listening to. I just was running the show, and that's what I decided to do. And I thought, you know, how bad can this be? I mean, I've been using heroin for 10 years. How bad can it be to get involved in this whole other thing? I'm learning new things again. And I'll tell you what, man, I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for those 4 years that I spent doing that. I really am so grateful for that, because I didn't know true powerlessness. You know, and it's interesting because I wasn't, like, physically strung out necessarily, but I'd never lost my mind before. You know, I'd never lost my mind before. And that's a whole nother, that was a whole nother thing for me. And that's what I did for 4 years. And you know, slowly things just whittled away. You know, the car's gone. Well, first the house is gone. And then I started showing up in psych wards, you know, every single psych ward in Austin. I have been a patient, you know, trying to, I would drive myself there. You know, I would sit for hours in their parking lots, you know, knowing that I needed to do something. And I was absolutely convinced there were like six guys in the back of my Subaru with ski masks on. I was absolutely convinced. I would take my car downtown and park it and then take a cab or whatever. This is when I had money still. Take a cab, you know, home, basically. You know, I mean, I was really living my life that way. And that trauma is real, you know. Psychosis is, none of it happened, but it's all very real, you know. And I don't, like, dispute that, you know. And it was months of having residual stuff, like hearing stuff in the fans and whatever, you know. And just having to reality check myself. Like, hey, did you hear that? Is that really happening? For a while, you know. It's not like that anymore, you know. So there is definitely hope. So that's, again, when I started checking myself into treatment. And at that time, I still had insurance. I still had money. I still had, you know, the house was eventually gone. And I remember thinking, Gina's old sponsor, she's got an amazing message. She's somebody who really helped me out a lot in my recovery. And she would talk about being homeless. And I remember thinking when she would share, like, how do you let that happen? Like, how do you, like, let yourself just go like that? Like, let everything go. And, you know, and I found out, you know, that you don't, it's not like that. You don't let anything go. It just avalanches, you know, one thing, then another thing. And that's exactly what my story was. So, again, like I said, I'm so grateful for those 4 years because it's exactly what I needed. There is no earthly way that I would be willing to do the things that came later had I have not been thoroughly had my ass handed to me by that drug and by that relationship, both, you know. They went together. That's another thing. They absolutely went together. And when I got clean this time, I had to make a decision that I was, you know, it really had to be so black and white. It had to be like a bottom line, like I cannot, will not, do not communicate with this person, not when they email me, not if it's their birthday, like never, you know. And that was extremely easy, actually. At the end, you know, it was just me or him, you know, and I choose me. But it took a long time for me to get to that place. It absolutely did. So that was the holdout when I was here at Austin Recovery, is I had no intention of doing that. That was certainly suggested, and I was just unwilling to do it. Ultimately, I ended up in a treatment center. People for years have been telling me that I should go to long-term treatment, that I was one of those that really needed a lot of time and space to like learn how to like live in the steps, not just like, you know, work them on, you know, go work a real job and, you know, go to some meetings. Like I needed to be like immersed in this work. And, so I found a place that it's not even a treatment center. It's like a weird spiritual community or something. I don't even know how to describe it. But whatever it is, it was exactly what I needed. And I stayed there for 9 months. And I really learned by living in a community with 60 people, like how to live in steps 1, 2, and 3. What am I really powerless over? Like, what does powerlessness look like? You know, what does it really look like? How do I show up when I'm around other people, you know? So many things, you know, so many lessons that I learned there. And I was always directed to the lesson. You know, I was always directed to how I can work my program around whatever situation was going on. And going back to the thing about gaining weight, I can't stress to you enough, like, how big of a deal that was to me. You know, I was raised by an anorexic, as I said, and I'm going to share about this because there's probably some person in this room that is struggling with that. I mean, I know when I was here, I was, and I struggled with it even when I was in that place for 9 months. I just had to surrender it, you know, and it was a big surrender for me of like, you know what, higher power, however this is going to look, like I am unwilling to kill myself anymore, you know. my experience with the steps. I make myself wrong a lot for the way that I work the steps, and I'm really working on that right now, like really trying to just own my experience, you know. When I was driving out here, I was just thinking, like, I have a message. I really do have a message of hope, and I don't necessarily work the steps in, like, this kind of fundamental, like, AA way that that sometimes I feel like I should. But then I just say, no, whatever I'm doing right now is working. And what I did, I guess, differently this time is that I really found a higher power. I found a source of power that helped me to show up better than I've ever shown up in my life. You know, what is this? How is it that I'm showing up like this? This is not how I show up. I don't show up to stuff like this, for sure. And, you know, I don't show up to a job. I don't show up to sponsor people. I don't show up to any of that stuff. So I had to attribute that to this higher power. You know, I made it really, really complicated. And when I just simplified it and started, like, looking for evidence of this power greater than myself, it actually started for me, the higher power thing started for me when I ran out of cigarettes in the treatment center. And maybe one or two of you are running out right now. It's terrifying, you know, because by the time I got clean, I didn't have any more hustle. There was nobody going to give me any money. Thank God my dad finally stopped enabling me, you know. He just stopped. And he'd said he was done many times, but he actually really was done this time. And I ran out of cigarettes, and it was really the beginning for me. It seems silly, but it was absolutely the beginning for me. There really is something happening here, and I'm going to be okay. I'm supported, you know, and I carry that with me today. With my problems in my life have gotten, you know, drastically different. You know, I have like school problems and work problems now. I was unemployable, clearly. I was unemployable, you know. I lost my train. No, I didn't lose my train of thought. How much more time do I have? Huh? Oh, okay. Wow. All right. What else am I going to talk about? Step 11, I guess. Like, where do I find my refuge in this program? Like, where do I find my connection that enables me to, like, to keep it? Well, first of all, I don't delude myself into thinking that I've got this, and that if I sit back, that everything, you know, I'm still have a deep respect for this disease and a deep respect for what can happen if I sit. I have experience with that, you know. I have absolute experience, and I just don't have I don't have a threshold anymore for. I sit and feel uncomfortable now, but I don't have a threshold for bullshit, you know. I really don't. I started to like work this program like a warrior instead of like, you know, halfway work it, you know. I really did, like, some kind of like a person that wants to live, like a person that cares about themselves, you know. I didn't know a lot about self-love at all until I went to this place. The cool thing about this place that I was at was there was no end date for treatment. Like, there was no end date. So you couldn't, like, you weren't getting out of anywhere. It was kind of put back on you. And that was kind of the first time that I ever was empowered with, like, this is my recovery. Like, I'm going to own this, you know? That truly has been my saving grace. I do a lot of things now. I have a great sponsor who doesn't ever tell me what to do. Literally never tells me what to do. She doesn't even, like, gently suggest, really. We just talk about it, you know? We just, like, hash it out. Like equal partners in this beautiful walk, you know. It's really different than being talked down to or being talked at. That just, it didn't, you know, works for some people. For me, that was, you know, it just wasn't what I needed. You know, I hate myself enough on my own, you know, I don't want to add any more shame or whatever on top of what I already had going on, you know. So I really try to stay around love-based people that are in their heart. That was something that I was really far away from, was my heart, you know. I wasn't willing to be vulnerable, you know. I just was not willing to be vulnerable. And I guess that would be my message. You know, I at one point was sitting in these chairs, you know, with plans and hopes and problems, lots of problems, you know. And I really did not know what was going to happen next. In retrospect, when I was here at AR, I want to say that I wish that I had have taken more suggestions. However, I really believe that I needed every single experience that I had. You know, I don't really regret. It's that idea of we don't regret the past. Like, I don't regret the past anymore. You know, at the time, I regretted the hell out of it. As I was sitting in yet another treatment center, I definitely regretted the decisions that I had made. But standing here now, I don't, you know. So what my life looks like today, I work in a treatment center, which is its own challenge. One thing I've definitely learned is that my recovery and my job are entirely different things. A lot of people, I think, get clean and want to go work in treatment, and I certainly did, and I love being in purpose. I really do. I love being in purpose. It really is. There's nowhere else I'd rather be. It's just interesting for me to have, like, a new level of surrender and learning, like, how to work, man. I had no idea how to be an employer, that idea of being a worker among workers, you know. I just had no idea. So my life has changed a lot. It's become very, very different, I think the most beautiful part about it is that every single thing that I have in my life today was not my idea. I wanted something entirely different a couple of years ago than what I have now. And I take that into my heart and really remember that when I start trying to design things and figure out what it is that I want to do next. And I just try to sit back and allow this higher power that has proven to me, you know, that I can, you know, given me grace, really. He's got me, you know, he, it, she, spirit, whatever, you know. That's one other thing I do want to talk about, because I'm filling up time, Chris, is this is not as terrible as I thought. It's not as bad, right? Yeah, this is only my third time doing this. What was I going to say? Enlarging my spiritual life. Like, that's where it's at. What a cool thing that is, you know. I was like at Natural Treasures the other day, like picking higher power stuff, and you know, I would get really into it. Why not? You know what I mean? If that's the thing that's going to save us, then why not get into it? You know, I decided instead of having somebody tell me like how to work this program and what the steps should mean, I decided to figure out what they meant to me, you know. And I think that's really important. You know, I spent a lot of years asking a lot of people what the program meant to them, and I never really asked myself, like, what does this mean to me? What does the 11th step really mean to me? You know, what does my higher power really mean? You know, really, what is my higher power? What does that really encompass? Like, how big is my higher power? You know, so these are just some of the interesting things that I'm learning, and this is all learning. You know, I mean, I'm far from the person I was even like 2 months ago. You know, I just keep moving my feet. Gina said something to me the other day. She said something about, you know, I'm not very smart, but I have really smart feet. And that's the truth, right? Like, I just move my feet. Or she also says pedal the bike, you know, pedal the bike. So I do, I just pedal the bike, you know, and I just allow, my heart. And like right now I'm supposed to be here sharing this. Hopefully, the last time I spoke, this is what made me say yes when Joey threw me under the bus. I said yes because the last time that I spoke, some guy came up to me and said that whatever I said, which I don't even know, because it was like I have no clue what I said, meant so much to him, changed something for him, and gave him some new perspective. And it was like, wow, you know, that it's kind of like my responsibility. Not kind of, it is my responsibility. You know, if I made it out alive, then I really should come here and share it. You know, I should come here and say, hey, I found this solution after 20 years of, you know, not finding a solution, thinking I had tried this, and turns out I hadn't. And I think that's important. Like, I really... now looking back, I have had an experience with the steps, and I really wish that for every single one of you, because it's just, there's just nothing like it. You know what I mean? It's like, I want all the freedom, you know, like I want all the freedom, and that's the path that I'm trudging right now with all of you. So thanks for letting me share.